Hi, this is Chelsea, and welcome to the first Jury Break. I'm going to be releasing content in between our regular episodes that will hopefully fill in some gaps, provide context, and strengthen our understanding about some of the deeper themes inside deliberations. Today we're talking to a lifestyle submissive who is going by the name Rebecca. That is not her real name. Her need for a pseudonym will become clear as you listen to the episode. I'll admit this is my first time recording an interview remotely, or anything remotely. We experienced more than a few technical difficulties. Hello, Rebecca? You cut out.
Yes, I'm going to see if I can move.
Can you hear me, Rebecca?
See if I can get better signal. Would that be okay?
Sure, of course.
Okay.
But the content of our dialogue was so compelling, I was determined to release this episode no matter what. I cleaned up the audio as best I could and hope it's a comfortable listening experience for everyone. I promise it'll get better. Bear with me. What Rebecca has to say is worth it. Here we go. Rebecca, when you initially reached out, you described yourself as a BDSM lifestyle practitioner. Can you explain what that means?
Yes. I am in a committed 24/7 total power exchange, monogamous MS relationship. For anybody who doesn't know what total power exchange is, basically I have ceded my power and my authority to my dominant. So I have exchanged my power to him, and in return he gets his needs met. He receives special services, things that bring him joy. And for me, by giving him my power, he then empowers me in ways that maybe I wouldn't be able to do on my own. So he'll force me to be independent at times when maybe I would prefer him to be in control. It allows me to not have to worry about things that normally I would worry about. I can just hand these things to him and he takes care of it for me. He also gives me a lot of self-confidence because I know that I'm loved and cherished. So it's a very yin and yang, a back and forth with this power exchange.
So what do you call your partner?
Currently, he is my master, and I believe that is the term that we will use from here on out. We began when we first met with sir, and that's sort of standard when you start to get into a DS relationship. Tested out daddy a few times. I know some people might be kind of weirded out by that term daddy, but it's a certain type of a dominant who is a daddy dom. They tend to be more nurturing. They have submissives who are either, they call them their baby girls or their littles. It's more of a nurturing sort of a relationship versus like a sadist dominant and his submissive. Mm-hmm. A daddy and a little. Littles are typically submissives who enjoy being in little space. They like to kind of revert to a childlike persona on occasion that fulfills something for them. So the daddy then nurtures them, takes care of them in whatever way, shape, and form they may deem. So it's not by any means like pedophiliac or incestual.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But, we tried that. We tried that a few times and it worked when I needed it emotionally. But master really encompasses all of that for us. I can go to him when I need some high protocol discipline and call him master, or if I just, need a little extra love.
Would you describe your relationship then as more on the nurturing end of the spectrum or more on the sadistic end of the spectrum?
We have a pretty good balance, actually. I tend to like kind of in the middle. Mm-hmm. And for me, my master is the same way. So he has sadistic tendencies. We do dabble in sadism and masochism, but it's not all the time.
If you don't mind my asking, how did you two meet and how long have you been together?
We met on a BDSM dating site. I had tried sort of meeting people in the community, and I was pretty new at the time. So for me, being online felt a little safer. Mm-hmm. So we met on a BDSM dating site, and we were long distance for a year. And just recently, he moved to where I live, he was in a position where he could do that, and the type of work that he's in made that possible. So he moved to me, and we've been living together ever since. So it's been almost a year living together.
May I ask if the status of your dominant submissive relationship is publicly known?
It is not. It's sort of a tough, it's a tough thing to, you know, quote unquote, come out of the BDSM closet. It's scary to a lot of people who don't understand it. So my family, most of my friends do not know, same with his. We do have a few, like a handful of people who we really trust, and they're aware of it. They understand it. I'd say maybe 4 or 5, just because they understand the relationship. They've taken the time to ask questions and learn about it. So we feel comfortable with them. Of course, we, you know, they, a few of them are in the lifestyle as well. So with them, we can be really free and open. Majority are not. So we are respectful, and we don't, you know, put things in their face or things that they may not understand. They may verbally understand it, but visually it could be off-putting, I suppose, to see me sitting on the floor by his feet or bringing him everything, you know. So we try to be respectful in that stance. But no, as far as family and most of our friends, they do not know. So they just see us as a married couple. And that's how we primarily act in public.
Okay. Well, speaking of that, I'm curious to know what an average day is like inside of your relationship.
An average day is really pretty typical for most people in vanilla lifestyles. You know, you get up, you get ready for work, go to work, come home, eat, you know, relax, go to bed. The difference is that we have something called protocol in a DS relationship.
Protocol.
Yes. Protocol is sort of like, it's like structure, rules, things that are set in place in order to keep our dynamic at the forefront. So that while we're moving through our vanilla day, we have these little things in place that sort of remind us, you're not vanilla. Here we are. This is our dynamic. This is who we are. It's some simple things and some things that most people wouldn't necessarily think would be BDSM related, but for us in our dynamic, it reminds us of who we are and what we do. So things like, I say good morning, master, and give him a kiss every morning, first thing when I wake up. Before I leave to go to work, I put on my day collar, which is it looks like a necklace, so it's close enough that people don't get suspicious. But I put my collar on before I go, and I recite my collar mantra, and that is just something that we do. So I have this little mantra that I say when I put my collar on, and it's my collar that was created for me, signifies that I'm owned and protected by my master, and then I say his dom name after that. So, you know, it sets me on the right foot for the day.
That's a ritual for you.
Yes, every day. I always text him when I go from like point A to point B when I'm driving, so he always knows where I am, how long it's been, if I'm stuck in traffic. He always has tabs on me. I send him an email update at lunch telling him how I feel, if I'm sick, how my day is going, what my mental state is, things that might be on my mind, just sort of a little mini update so he knows what to expect later in the day. When I get home, I, you know, change, get comfortable, prepare the meal that he's picked out for the evening. And then I wait for him to arrive. He always lets me know when he's on his way. And when I hear him pulling up, I get into first position by the door. So when he walks in, I'm there on my knees waiting for him. So he comes in, takes off his shoes, says hello. He may let me sit on my knees for a while, or he may just reach his hand out for me and let me stand. That's sort of our coming back to each other greeting. And then we'll do normal stuff, you know, relax, watch TV. Sometimes I'll sit on the floor by his feet. And I'm always prepared for, sex or BDSM scenes, anytime in his presence. So That's sort of how our night goes. So I never know day to day what he's in the mood for.
This is a warning. Rebecca's audio is about to become garbled. I kept recording because it's still understandable, and it only lasts 2 minutes. If you can hold on 2 minutes, I promise her voice becomes clear again. Is there anything in your life that makes you fearful being in a relationship like this?
No, actually, before I found BDSM and DS, I always seem to attract a certain kind of a man and be attracted to a certain kind of a man. For me, you know, I'm heterosexual. Domineering men, controlling men, because I was in the vanilla atmosphere where there were no rules or standards or people who understood, you know, what the power exchange was, and they didn't respect it. You know, they wanted to force me to submit rather than let me submit to them because I wanted to. So those were times when I was fearful. Now that I'm in this lifestyle, I feel very safe and I feel very loved. So fear about the lifestyle itself, there's really nothing there. Really, my only biggest fear is that he is a little bit older than me. We have about a 22-year gap in our ages. So that's why we went ahead and got married to sort of tie all the loose ends up and make sure that we were all taken care of.
How do you feel listening to the experience of Samantha Hall through her jury's deliberations as you're listening to this podcast?
There are times when I want to like reach through my, you know, podcast and just like shake somebody like, no, you don't understand. Like, especially, I mean, like with like Carl, you know, it's very frustrating to listen to his very narrow-minded viewpoint and not really want to open his mind a little and explore some possibilities. It's also a little scary. It's scary to think, I mean, I don't know if Samantha is, I don't know if she's one of these people who's maybe a predator hiding within the lifestyle who intends to hurt people, but considering the history and that she's in the community, I don't really see that as being true. So I tend to identify with them. And I just think to myself, like, if something ever happened to me, I would just be rolling in my grave if I knew that my dominant was being put on murder trial for something that I consented to do.
Right.
That just terrifies me. And that he would be judged by people who aren't necessarily peers because they don't understand.
Right. A listener wrote in with a question about absent acts. Absent meaning an act that you may undertake or perform for your dom, your dominant. What would you prefer I call him?
Dominant's fine. Dominant is fine.
When he isn't present. So have you ever been asked to perform any kink-related acts for your partner when he isn't there?
Yes. Yes. Especially more so when we were long distance. Mm-hmm. We actually did that quite frequently. They weren't necessarily as risky as what happened in this case. But a few of them were, you know, they're moderately risky. I'm not sure how into detail you want to get with that. I'm an open book. I really, you know, other than being closeted in this stance, I'm not against sharing. So,
well, that's really kind of you. Did you, have you ever asphyxiated, when you were alone?
No,
no. Is that part of your practice?
We do some choking. We do some asphyxiation. we do a little bit of that. Mostly it is choking though, because he's hands on versus using an implement to do that. And that's just our preference. Everybody's different. But for us, you know, we're not comfortable enough with rigging to do a lot of that sort of thing, or with nuts. Probably the riskiest thing that that I was asked to do is some breast torture, which is we used rope to do this. And basically you tie your breasts in such a way that it cuts off blood flow, makes them swell, change color. And then you do some impact play. It makes them very sensitive. So because of the nature of that act, he had me be very prepared. So I had, you know, safety shears next to me. I tied a quick release knot. I texted him exactly when I started and when I was finished. In some cases, he would have me do videos just to make sure that I was okay. Mm-hmm. And then he would tell me when to stop. So it was never for very long. He was with me, even though he wasn't necessarily with me.
Right. And you never felt endangered, even while performing an act, when he wasn't physically present, because you felt that he was monitoring you in some way.
Correct.
Okay. Okay, great. In the podcast, Samantha Hall said in her text message to Troy, "This is not for you, it's for me." Do you believe that? It's been a line that's been a major point of contention in the jury room, particularly Carl seems to really cling to that to prove that this wasn't done for Troy's benefit, but it was done for Samantha's benefit. So I'm wondering what your perspective on this line is.
Knowing that she is a sadist, it's kind of a yes and no. With her being a sadist, for her controlling him and denying him a pleasure that she knows that he wants is satisfying to her. But on the same side of that coin, it's like she knows that he likes this, and she knows that he likes humiliation. She knows that he likes to be sort of restricted in different ways. So yes, I believe that it was partially for her, but also for him, even though she didn't say it that way. You know, for him, he gets gratification knowing that she's restricting him from doing this and that she wants him to suffer, even though really he wants to suffer too a little bit.
Right. Okay, that makes sense to me. Is there anything about BDSM, before we sign off, is there anything about BDSM you want listeners to understand?
Yes. You see a lot of BDSM in the media, movies, books, you know, fairly recently. And it's really not like that. It's
a case of inaccuracy.
Oh my gosh. Yes. It's so bad. Those books and those movies are, they really represent an abusive relationship. In BDSM, you have to be open and honest, and not just with yourself, but with your partners. And it requires hard work, humility, practice. You have to be willing to learn and willing to listen. Submissives are not just people who want to be trampled all over or who are weak or they are, you know, have psychological problems. A lot of us, you have to be very strong to be a submissive. You have to know what you like and what you don't like, and to be firm and stand by your hard limits and your soft limits, and, you know, be willing to trust somebody if they can prove that they're worthy with, in some cases, your life. So you have to be in a very strong place to be a submissive. And on the other hand, dominance, it's not like a free pass. Like, I'm a dominant, I get what I want, you're going to do what I say. It's not like that. A dominant has a huge responsibility. You know, they take the control from another person and they are responsible for that person and to ensure their well-being and to also push them a little and give them new experiences and help them grow. But, you know, it's not just this abusive sort of a cycle that you tend to see in the media and what people get an idea of. It's not for everybody, but it's definitely not abusive. And you have other safety things in place, like safe words, you know, negotiations. Negotiations are constant. So, you know, you sit down on a peer-to-peer level where you are both equals. No one is the dominant. No one is the submissive before you do anything. And you say, this is what I would like. And they say, this is what I would like. And then you agree on things. You negotiate. You come to conclusions. If you say my hard limit is this, the dominant will respect that and go nowhere near that. You know, so, and then at that point, once you've come to an agreement, you step into these roles and you have a good time. So, you know, it may seem to some people like, you know, they just dominance come in and take over and they get what they want. And, you know, they're rude and they can be jerks. And it's not like that. Not all of us submissives are craving things or have horrible backgrounds or, you know, abused, you know, childhoods. And, you know, it's not quite like that. We are all very happy with who we are and where we are. And this for us is how we achieve normalcy. There's sort of a spectrum, you know, for every person, a dominant to submissive personality. And most people kind of lie in the middle. But for people like us who are in this lifestyle, we tend to be on one extreme or the other. So what we need is a partner who can balance us out. And this is how we achieve it.
I see. My final question for you, Rebecca, is, do you think Samantha Hall is guilty?
It's so difficult. I feel like so much more to be revealed.
It's true. We're only like halfway through the season. So,
At this point, if this was the end, and this, everything that we know now up to this point was all of it, I don't think that there is enough hard evidence to show that she had malicious intent to really, even like that second degree murder charge that they were kind of going over all the details for that. I don't think that they can really, at this point, solidly say that she had malicious intent or ill will toward him. So in that case, at the very least, I would say some negligence. I know for me personally, my dominant would never have me hang by the neck alone, even if we were into that, mm-hmm. which is not really our thing. But to be alone and to not have another person there with scissors in hand, with him watching my skin color and, you know, seeing me struggle, you know, paying attention to me without him being there, I just don't see him doing that. I mean, and it seems like maybe they were comfortable with this sort of thing. She didn't really give him a lot of instructions, which to me suggests that they've done this before. Mm-hmm. But still, with her not being there, it does leave a lot. It leaves a lot of things that could go wrong. And he did not say that he was uncomfortable with it. He didn't even text her back to say he started. Which, you know, or he was about to start, which I found to be a little confusing. You know, I mean, personally, if I was going to do something that risky, I would be letting him know every step of the way what I was doing, you know, like I'm about to start. So make sure you're timing this. Like if I don't call you back, call somebody, you know.
Right. That's a good point.
It's happened to me where I have been given instructions to do some kind of a task or some kind of an act by myself. And I've fallen asleep because I came home, I ate something, I was tired, I laid down for a few minutes, and then he sent me the text and I was already asleep. And so he didn't know what was going on. So he would call until finally he got a hold of me and I'm like, oh, I'm fine. I just, you know, I fell asleep, no big deal. So I can kind of relate to that in a way of her maybe not knowing if he had started, maybe not wanting to freak out, hoping that if the cops went to the house that they would just find him asleep in bed, you know?
Right.
So I can kind of understand and relate to that. But yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily think she's guilty. I would say I personally kind of feel like it was a little negligent to have him do that by himself.
Okay, great. Well, I would like to thank you for being so open, so warm, so eloquent in explaining a lot of things I think that have been confusing for some people to wrap their minds around. I'm very grateful for that, A. And B, I feel like there is a chance that we may get some follow-up questions. So if that happens, would you be interested in answering any more questions down the road in future?
Absolutely. I'm closeted, but I do like to talk about this with people, and I like to, you know, sort of give people insight into something that they are unfamiliar with and maybe have questions with. And you know, this is my life, and I'm happy to help others understand it.
I love that. Well, I'm very grateful that you took the time to speak with me and to share your story with all of us. And again, congratulations on your marriage. Congratulations on your happy relationship. I'm really, really happy for you and thankful to you and your dominant that he allowed you to speak with me today.
Yes, thank you so much. And I love the podcast. I'm so glad you've done this. And this is the best subject matter. I just love it. Oh, thank you so much.
I know it's a little douchey to include the part of the interview where she compliments the podcast. I hate it when other podcasts do that, and I just did it myself. But I kept it in because I want people to know that not everyone in the BDSM community views this podcast in a negative light. That is not my agenda. I just want to start conversations. And regardless of what you're seeing on social media, my object also isn't to villainize Carl. If anyone listening to this agrees with Carl, the juror, agrees with his background, his beliefs, his approach to this case, please email deliberationspod@gmail.com. I'd like to talk to you. I'd also love to hear from those with a working knowledge of the criminal jury system. If that's you, don't be shy. Please email deliberationspod@gmail.com. In other news, the Facebook group Deliberations Room has been cracking me up all week. Seriously, you guys are funny. Thank you for making me laugh and introducing some levity into this heavy subject. If you haven't joined the Facebook group yet, search for Deliberations Room on Facebook. You can also follow me on Twitter @DeliberationPod, on Facebook @DeliberationsPod, or check out the home site deliberationspod.com. In 2 days, episode 7 drops, entitled Pheromone Hitch. A rope bondage expert demonstrates the knot Samantha allegedly tied. Jurors hold and experience the physical evidence. Rope, knot, and footstool. Guest starring real-life rope bondage expert, Miss Cassie. Make sure to subscribe so you don't miss it, and I'll see you in 2 days.